Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We'll be talking about orchids and tropical plants on Garden Talk today with two guests, Colton Blackburn, who is the conservatory curator at the Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison, Terry Hodge, the new conservatory and orchid horticulturist there. So it's great to have them along, and certainly looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Colton Blackburn, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Terry Hodge, your first time around. Thanks for coming by today.
Very excited to be here, Larry.
You're pretty new at Olbrich Gardens. What's your talk about your professional background first a little bit.
Sure. Sounds good. So I've been at Olbrich for about 3 months now. I started at the beginning of November, end of October. Moved to Madison in 2016. And started a master's in horticulture. That's what brought me here. Mm-hmm. Finished that up this past May and was looking for jobs. And ended up finding a position at Olbrich right here in town for an orchid position, something that I'm really passionate about. I have experience working at D.C. Smith Greenhouse at UW-Madison and also some experience working in France with tropicals and orchids as well. And so I was really excited to be able to have this opportunity to come to Olbrich.
So what is it about orchids?
I think,
what draws you to orchids?
I think for me, it's just how diverse they are. There's so many different types of orchids, terrestrials, epiphytes, those that grow on rocks. And you can really spend a lifetime learning about them and really just scratch the surface. And I love things like that. There's always something to learn.
And Colton, Olbrich's been getting some renovations.
Correct.
A lot, and kind of pretty exciting, actually. Would you talk about them a little bit and how that's going?
Sure. So, yeah, we're about it started September of this past fall, and we were working on building a new learning center. So that will be a facility designated just for our education department, as well as a brand new greenhouse range. That's where we'll house our tropical collections, our orchid collection, as well as do a lot of the production of summer annuals and spring annuals, a lot of those plants that go into the outdoor bedding displays.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really cool.
Yeah.
You know, about this time of the year, I tell my students in the classes I teach that a really cheap date is to go to Olbrich and go to the Bolts Conservatory. And for $2.
$2, yeah.
You can
not much.
Get in. Well, talk about what visitors are going to see there. It's really a wonderful place.
So, yeah, we've been, you know, there's been a lot of changes that we've been implementing in the conservatory, opening it up, and also just developing some different exhibits and programs that are going to be taking place there ongoing, like throughout the year. So, we created a new Garden to Glass program, which are experience more like, and this is something you can do in the evenings. You can just, you know, make a reservation, but this is something where you're actually getting to taste, touch, smell, and learn about sort of the history of the Bowles Conservatory, as well as sort of our conservation message and some fun little educational things along the way.
I love going in there. I mean, you know, some of the tree. How tall is the tallest tree in there? It goes right up to the top of the glass of the dome.
So the pyramid's 50 feet tall. So it's right up there, at the top. So yeah, every year that gets a good prune in the spring. But yeah,
and there's birds flying around. There's waterfalls. You can go up a couple of different levels that you can walk through. It's just a fabulous, fabulous place. Well, talking about the conservatory. Terry, what are the orchids that are growing in the conservatory?
Great. So right now we have a number of different orchids. You mentioned the two different levels. Well, up top, if you happen to visit the Bolts Conservatory, there's an area called the Orchid Area, and that's usually where we like to showcase a number of the different orchids that we have in bloom. And right now we're actually trying to kind of redesign that area, so be on the lookout for that to change in the next few months into the summer. And be sure to look around when you're in there, because there's orchids all over hidden in the trees. So it's very fun to have that space.
I spent a year at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad and Tobago, and so I had really good friends there. I made some good friends there, and one of them was quite an orchid aficionado, and orchids grown in Trinidad or in that part of the world are absolutely amazing. I mean, they're growing everywhere. They're sticking out of tree limbs and whatever. It's a wonderful opportunity for me. And you've kind of got that setting, I guess, within the conservatory itself.
Right. And if anyone
ever created that climate.
Exactly. And if you visit a tropical area, that's one of the first things you'll notice is all the different things growing in the trees besides the trees themselves.
So we've already had, do you know anything about olive trees? We've got a photo of an olive tree, and you may be able to see that. It was emailed by Mark, and he keeps it inside in the winter, outside in the summer, and he'd like to know if there's any way to get it to bloom. And that's a good question. I have no idea. And Dave Potratz, our engineer, is working right now on the photo so you can see it. Well, without even having to look at the photo, tell us, is there a way to get those olive trees to bloom?
Well, so they are a Mediterranean plant, so you're going to struggle with giving it that, you know, really hot, dry weather that they really like. So with, you know, any Mediterranean plants, there's sort of a rainy season, you know, a wet period, and then there's more of like a long dry. So I know it's probably, without seeing the picture, I'm not sure, but yeah, you really want to make sure that it's not staying too wet, but it might be tricky here during our winters getting it enough light.
But, you know, you got summertime, you got humid and hot, and then in the wintertime, you know, like a lot of houses, they're dry and hot, so maybe you got enough light. The other problem is
that
light.
That might be one of the issues.
That's where the issue would come in the wintertime, I would expect.
Mm-hmm.
I bring Limey, my lime tree, in the fall, and Limey is flowers like crazy once about the time she's gets inside, and still picking limes off of her right now. Still about 10 left on her. She keeps coming. Well, somebody sent a photo of a wonderful orchid. So let's get back to orchids for a bit, and the orchid show, the Orchid Guild show, holding their annual Orchid Quest at Olbrich.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to be going on there?
All sorts of stuff.
Yeah,
so there's going to be a bunch of displays from different growers and, you know, different exhibitors from all across the Midwest.
Well, I tell you, having been there many times, it's just a wonderful time of the year to be going and seeing all those beautiful orchids and the aroma, the fragrance, I should say. And I think only one time was I ever able to go to that and not walk out with out at least one orchid. Oh, my goodness me. So, tell you what, I just lost my picture here, so let me see if I can get it back. You can join in with your questions. Maybe you've got a question about orchids or another houseplant. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. And they always look so beautiful. For the first time purchaser, what's the best orchid to take home?
Well,
I'm thinking one that's going to flower and it's not going to die right away. What would that be? Do you want to talk about that, Terry?
Well, oftentimes when people think about orchids in the home, they're often talking about the Phalaenopsis orchids or the moth orchids.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a pretty good plant to start with. They're easily accessible. You can find them now in most grocery stores. And they happen to get along well with the climate that we have in our homes. Lower light, okay humidity, And so I think that's a really good orchid to start with.
Yeah, I guess so. One of the issues that comes up is that you bring them home. Let's say they're already flowering and they look so beautiful, and then eventually they drop their flowers, and then some people can't get them to flower again.
That is an issue. And that's happened to me actually too, so don't feel bad. When you bring one of those orchids home in full bloom, you know, usually those flowers won't last very long after that transitory period, moving it from the store to the home, differences in humidity, it'll drop those flowers. But you got to just hang in there, keep the orchid. What's interesting about Phalaenopsis orchids is they typically like to have a period of cooling in the fall in order to initiate that spike. And so a couple weeks to 4 weeks in the temperature range of low 60s mm-hmm. would be able to initiate that that flower spike. And so then that will give you a good chance to rebloom it.
We have some callers online. We'll take some calls. Chris in Racine has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Larry. I'm kind of jealous that you talk about limey all the time. I have about 30 plants that I started from seed in the seedless tangerines. And they're from 3 years old down to just a couple seedlings. And I was wondering if they're ever going to flower and produce oranges.
And where did you get the seeds from?
Inside the seedless tangerines, the little cuties.
All right. Okay. Well, is there a chance, Colin?
I'm not sure. I don't think you can actually take the seeds from just like your store-bought cutie and get them to produce. A lot of citrus are either grafts or... And I know there's certain citrus virus, so they don't do a lot from seed. And usually if you're starting one from seed, it can take like upwards of 7 years, usually at least 5 years before they will produce.
So you're kind of got an uphill battle here, Chris. I don't know if you're going to be able to do it. But thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Been talking a bit about orchids, but we've taken some other questions as well. We can certainly talk about other houseplants as well with our two guests. Our two guests, Colton Blackburn, conservatory curator at the Olbrich Botanical Gardens, Terry Hodge, conservatory and orchid horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our producer. You are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests from the Olbrich Botanical Gardens, Colton Blackburn and Terry Hodge. Always great to have reps from the garden come and visit with us. Orchids don't really grow in soil much, do they? Or talk a little bit about how an orchid grows.
Sure. Well, you know, believe it or not, there are some orchids that are considered terrestrial. Some native orchids here, some of the lady mm-hmm. slipper orchids. But when most people think of them, they're thinking of the epiphytic type orchid. So these are the orchids that actually grow on other plants. And those are mostly concentrated in the tropics. So things like the Phalaenopsis orchids, some of the Cattleyas, others like that are epiphytic plants. So they're growing without soil.
And so when you're thinking about watering and fertilizing and that sort of thing with those plants, there, I know there are orchid fertilizers, for example. What are they consisting of typically?
So, you know, oftentimes you can usually just use a real balanced fertilizer.
Okay.
The thing that you want to keep in mind is you want to use a lower strength. So either a quarter strength or half strength, and do that more often. That simulates a bit more how the orchids would be receiving their nutrition in the wild. The rain would come down into the tree, wash through the tree leaves, picking up some minute nutrients, and then washing over the roots. And so by using fertilizer in a lower strength, you're sort of mimicking that natural system.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. Well, Juanita in Hustisford has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Juanita.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been wondering what to do about this orchid that I have, if I should keep it or toss it out. It's kind of neglected. It still has some leaves on it, you know, living leaves that has a lot of dead leaves on it. And it also is sprouting all those air roots, so it's kind of goofy looking. And I'm just wondering, what's the best way to revitalize this? Should I take it out of the pot? Can I cut some of the old roots off? Or what can I do?
Yeah. So what do you think, Terry?
Well, I just want to ask real quick, do you happen to know what kind of orchid it is?
No, it's just one of those that they sell at the grocery store.
Okay, so probably most likely one of the Phalaenopsis or moth orchids. So as I mentioned a bit earlier, the biggest thing for those is that they need a sort of cooling period in the autumn or the fall in order to initiate that spike, the flower spike, that is. And so that would be something that you would want to do, you know, next fall. As far as right now, it could probably benefit from repotting, it sounds like. I don't know how the leaves look. Are they sort of wrinkled at all, or are they nice and full?
Well, it has a couple of leaves that are full. You know, they still feel, you know, smooth and shiny like good leaves. And it's like it has some of the, I've been cutting some of the old dead leaves off as they've been dying off.
Okay. Well, you know, I think that you're right where you should be. I would give it a new pot, a new potting mix, and see how it does.
And how big, now, let's say you've got a 4-inch pot. Do you go to a 6-inch pot, or how do you adjust the pot size? You just kind of go one size up, or?
Well, that's one of the things to be very careful with orchids. They like to be underpotted, not overpotted, and so they like to be a bit crowded, and that'll help you also managing water, because that's one of the number one ways to kill an orchid is to overwater it. And so if you underpot it, and you base the pot size on the roots rather than the foliage, that will sort of help you maintain your watering regime.
So look at those roots, and you want to put them in a pot that is about equal to the, not giving them a lot of room.
Exactly.
Okay. Juanita, does that help?
Yes, it does. Yeah. Oh, another thing is that they sell those orchid pots with the, like, holes in it. Is that the best thing for them?
Those are pretty good. So just keep in mind that with any type of pot, you're going to have to change some of the habits. And so if you're in a plastic pot, you won't have to water as much. If you're in one of those pots that has more drainage holes, you'll have to water more often. But those are a good way to sort of give it the drainage it needs and help you if you like to water more. That's one of those strategies.
There you go, Juanita. Thank you so much for calling. And, well, let's take another call. Susan in Fitchburg, you've got a potting question, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I do. I have three of the moth orchids and one Catalia. Is that how you pronounce it?
Catalia.
And I'm wondering when you should repot them. They keep flowering, so I'm not, you know, they're healthy and everything, but one seems to be kind of starting to burst out of its pot, and I'm thinking it needs to be repotted. Other than looking for healthiness, what else should I look for?
So when you're dealing with repotting, typically it sounds like it might be your Cattleya that's starting to grow out of the pot?
No, it's actually one of the moth ones.
And is it just starting to, like, lean out?
Sprout And that one that I'm thinking needs to be repotted is actually starting a new flower sprout. So I don't know if now is a good time either.
Yeah, so if it's setting its flower spikes, you'll want to hold off until it's finished. Generally, you know, we look at it like every few years, like maybe every 3 years we look at repotting them. This is typically when the media starts to break down. If your media isn't breaking down, then you're probably you're okay in that pot, because you definitely don't want to just put them in a bigger pot if they're doing well for you.
Does that help, Susan?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Let's go to Tom in Glendale next. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. Good show, guys. Couple of questions real quick and then a comment. I guess I'll do the comment first, and that's what I found when I buy those $5 clearance phalaenopsis from, you know, the Home Depot places and such. I tend to keep them separate, but if they're flowering, if you keep them away from the windows and they get less light, those flowers tend to last. I've got one right now that's about 3 weeks old, and it looked like it was going to lose all of its. But my real question is, where can I find a Wisconsin-grown orchid, or I should say natural to Wisconsin orchids, locally, whether it's in a store or just, you know, out in the state in nature? Any advice?
So my only advice would be to check the American Orchid Society website. They actually have a list of orchid sellers or suppliers by state. I don't know if there are many in Wisconsin. I know there are some in the more in the Chicago, Illinois area, but that would be a good place to check for an orchid seller.
I'm thinking about Orchid Quest. Is there a chance that there might be some for sale right there?
Oh yeah, there's lots for sale.
That would be a great opportunity, actually.
Tom, you know, you're in Glendale, but if you want to take a little trip, you're going to have a chance at Orchid Quest to see some of them and walk out the door with one or more. How's that sound?
It sounds good, and we've done that in the past. And what I'm really interested in is, because I know orchids are native to Wisconsin, but where do you find native Wisconsin orchids, I guess is my question.
Yeah. And so the orchid... Did you say, what was the name of the organization? The Orchid Society?
Yeah, American Orchid Society.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's take another call. Anne in Appleton.
Hi. My question is, I had an orchid that I was given as a gift. It's a smaller one. It's got very large, two big, large green leaves. After it flowered, it wasn't watered for about 2 or 3 months, and then I started watering it again. And my question is, after it's gone dry like that, you know, the leaves are still green. Will it ever flower again, or, you know, should you compost it? And then a second quick question is, I was told to, you know, a method of watering is to lift it out of the pot and put it in 2 inches of water, leave it for 5 minutes, and then put it back in the pot. Is that the watering method that you recommend as well?
Okay. A couple of questions for you there. Who wants to go with that, Terry?
Sure, I'll take a stab at it. So the first question there, whether or not your orchid will survive, come back, does it seem to have, like you said, did you say it had new leaves on it?
Yes.
Okay.
Are still bright green. There's no flowering stem, though.
Okay. Well, you know what? That sounds completely normal, actually. So as long as it has nice, healthy leaves, eventually, with good care, it will come and flower for you again. So it seems like you saved it just in time and are doing the right thing if it has those nice leaves. And then the second question
is on watering.
Yeah, I would recommend not taking it out of the pot. So you said you actually remove it from the pot and soak it in the water?
Right. It said put it in a pot of water, soak it for 5 minutes. So the water, it's sort of watered from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
Ends up being, you know, watered about halfway up from the bottom.
And you just have it like in a terracotta pot or...
Actually, it was one of the grocery store ones. So it's in a plastic container within a pot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fairly easy to pull out because it's still in the plastic container.
I see. Yeah. So as long as you're not like losing too much of the media when you're doing that, that's okay. And I have mine in some terracotta pots, and I will just sink those just right in the sink and soak them that way.
Oh, so you cover the whole pot?
Yeah, so I'll just drop it, the whole pot, in the sink and soak it in there for
sink
a little
full of water
while.
And
yeah, sink full of just water. And but yeah, I think if it's holding its shape and you're not losing like the media or anything by soaking it, because the orchids definitely want to be snug, like they. Especially like when you're dealing with terracotta and stuff, their roots will start to like sort of attach, and you don't want to just be like pulling them in and out because you can damage the roots that way.
But here's Anne with plastic.
Yeah, she's got a plastic one. So, I'd say, you know, it sounds like it's working.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it,
right,
I guess.
Exactly.
That sort of thing. Anne, thanks. Appreciate your call. Diane in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I always love your show, Larry.
Thank you.
I'm a longtime orchid grower, and this is 35 years ago. My favorite orchid was the Cymbidium, and I had a dining room that was really cold with a brick floor, and it loved it, and I'd throw it in the shower once a week and give it a dash of either fish emulsion or the Peters. I don't know if they still make the fertilizer, but I kind of alternate. And it gets spikes on it that were huge, and there were 8 Cymbidium flowers on each. And I got it at Hauserman's Orchids. I don't know if they're still in business or not, but it had a first-class certificate, and I love that Cymbidium. The treasure. I mean, really. And it hung in there because it loved where it was, and it was a good orchid when I bought it. And the greenery on it, you know, it had these long, luscious, long foliage on it. And even if it wasn't blooming, you know, it still, and it bloomed year after year after year. So that was one. And the second one I love was the Oncidium, the dancing dolls. You know, they each little orchid looked like a dancing doll, and that was another one. And I found the secret was putting them in the shower and pretending they were being rained on. I guess they loved it. I never repotted them or anything. And that's it. You know, those are two great, great orchids.
So shout-outs for the Oncidium. And the Cymbidium.
Cymbidium.
Yep.
What do you think, guys?
We actually just had a big Cymbidium bloom for us. These past 2 weeks it probably started?
Yeah. And
yeah, they're one that likes it. They like that cool, a little bit cooler period, semi-terrestrial. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're both great orchids.
Great orchids. Diane, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Jan in Viroqua next. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I have a number of, now I'm blocking on the name, the moth ones.
Yep. The Phalaenopsis.
Phalaenopsis. And they're spiking for me now. It's really nice because they seem to spike right about this time of year, and now I know why, because of the coolness in the fall. But my question is, what is the function of the air roots? And my other question is, how do my orchids talk to me? How do they communicate? So one of them is growing a ton of air roots while the others aren't. And, you know, the texture of their leaves, and how do they tell you what they want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great question.
Good questions.
Yeah. So as far as the roots go, those air roots are actually one of the defining characteristics of orchids, especially the epiphytic types, which the Phalaenopsis is. And so they're kind of covered with a spongy type material. And so when they're dry, they'll be silver. And then as you wet that silver tissue will absorb water and then deliver it to the plant. And so one of the ways that the roots talk to you is if they are silver, then that means that they're pretty dry. And if you notice, once you water them, they'll kind of turn green. That's how you know that they're wet. As far as other things, the leaves, you know, if they're a bit wrinkled, that could be a couple different things. It could be too little water. It could also be too much if some of the roots are damaged. Can't think of anything else we could mention as far as...
Yeah.
Well, and I'd mention with the air roots as well, you want to make sure that those are staying, like, firm to the touch. If they're getting, like, soft or spongy, then they're probably getting too much water and probably rotting out. You want to watch the tips on those air roots. They'll usually stay, like, they'll be, like, you know, maybe a few centimeters of, like, green there. And if that air root starts to shrivel, then that might be a good sign that it's not getting enough water or moisture in the air.
So the plants talk to you in a lot of different ways, Jan.
Does that mean I should be misting them at all?
Oh, should she be misting a little?
Well, are they starting to shrivel at all?
Well, let me go and... They're right here. Let me go and look. No, they're not.
Nope, then if they look good, you definitely don't want to add too much moisture to them. Usually it's just like another way for them to pick up moisture from the air. So I think, yeah, if they have healthy green tips and they're nice and firm, then it's probably doing well.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. And I don't know if you guys can see this on your screen, but there's an email from Jan. She has a broadleaf succulent that's developed small wart-like growths on the leaves. They eventually form brown patches, and then the leaf dies. The plant's growing under grow lights, and she's careful not to overwater. Any ideas what might be causing those little bumps?
Hmm.
Would it be some sort of insect issue that would be involved there, or scale? Doesn't look to me...
It doesn't look like an insect.
No, it doesn't.
It almost...
Just little bumps.
I don't know if it looks like a blight or some sort of... Is that like a bacterial...
Hard one to say, Gene. Yeah. I'm not sure what we can tell you about it. One of the things you could do is to send that same photo to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Brian Huddleston, Dr. Death, is the one who operates it. But if you type that in and just send that photo to Brian at the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, if he doesn't have an answer, he might also send it on to the insect diagnostic lab, and they take a look there. But I would highly recommend that you do that, because it's pretty tough. But Brian sees this kind of stuff all the time, and could, if you include that description along with the photo, you're probably going to be in good shape. Patricia in Madison, you're up next. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning, Larry and guests. I just want to say people should not be deterred by the initial cost of purchasing an orchid. I mean, rather getting a person a bouquet that's going to wither soon, orchids can last for months in their blooming stage. And, of course, I started out with one, and now I've got four, and three of them are about to come into bloom. And I was to Orchid Quest last year, and it'll just take your breath away to see the different varieties and colors of orchids.
You're certainly right about that, Patricia. Thank you so much. And there is a lot to see there. Some unusual orchids from around the world. There are people there know a lot about growers. There's some about growing orchids. There's some speakers and... So fabulous vendors, for sure, as I can attest to having purchased a bunch of stuff there at one time or another over the years. So, Patricia, thanks again. Appreciate it very much. Let's take a call from Steve in Lafarge,
Steve, hi to you.
Hi. I was calling because a caller had mentioned that he was looking for Wisconsin native orchids.
Yeah.
And in my adventures, I was told once that Jack in the Pulpit is an orchid. And, I'm not sure that that's true, but they have those at Jung's, actually.
Ah, yes. Jung's. And is Jack in the Pulpit, is that an orchid? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
I'm going to say I don't think it is, but...
No, I don't think it is. It's an aroid, it looks like, from just quick research online.
But it's
a beautiful plant.
Yeah, but it's also not a bad idea to check in with some of the places like Jung's and Klein's, and some of the other places may well have more information for you or could even get.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to ask them, you know, that you're looking for something. And
yeah, there you go. Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate your call. Colton Blackburn and Terry Hodge, both with the Olbrich Botanical Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller. You, my friends, are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller talking about houseplants, zeroing in a bit on orchids. Always great to have folks from the gardens come by. And today we have with us a couple of guys, Colton Blackburn and Terry Hodge. Mary in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. So my question is that I have an orchid, again, one of those $5 ones. And I've had it like 3 or 4 years. And it's the most prolific on reproducing flowers of any of the many that I have. But this year, after it's finished blooming, it ran into some trouble, and it was I took it back out, and the roots weren't very well, and I've just taken it out this week. And, again, the roots were not in good condition. And they were mushy, and so I cut them off, but I'm down to like three little sprouts of roots, and they don't look very healthy. And I'm wondering if, and now the leaves are getting limp. I repotted it in fresh bark, and then I soaked that bark without the plant in it, and then I drained that bark real well so that it was, you know, wet but not holding a lot of visible
Yes.
moisture.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if there's anything we can do to save this, or if I'm just going to lose it, because now the leaves are quite limp.
Oh, doesn't sound good. What do you think, Terry?
Yeah. Well, so you said that the roots that you do have, the two or three there, don't look too good. Are they nice and firm, or are those also...
They seem to be, but at the very top where it's attached to that main stalk, there it's not firm.
That's not good.
Yeah. If it was
for
the
sure.
opposite, I would say that that'd be okay. But gosh, you know, it's kind of difficult. Sometimes what you can do when you don't have a lot of roots is you can actually, if you get some sort of sphagnum moss, you can kind of put the plant in that and then put it in a bag at least for a little bit and try to keep that moisture up. It'll get the leaves more firm again, and then maybe it could push out some more roots. But if they're sort of thin and hollow at the stem, I'm not quite sure if you have much recourse there.
Yeah, so a bag, a plastic bag, do you don't seal it, or do you seal it?
You can seal it. It's sort of just a temporary little high humidity microclimate to keep that plant alive, sort of baby it along until it pushes out new growth.
And so that might be a week, or how long would you give it? A few days?
You know, you could do it, sort of soak it well, and then put it in there, and then maybe once a week, just check it, let it breathe a little bit. I've done this a couple times. Sometimes it can go wrong. You can get some rot and stuff, but sphagnum moss typically has some antifungal properties to it, so if you're using fresh sphagnum, that could be one solution.
All right. Mary, give that a try. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Jeff in Oregon next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment. You've had a couple of callers talking about native orchids and implying maybe that they could go out in the woods and dig them. I'm not sure that's legal to do. Any native plants, taking them out of their natural habitat. So you might want to steer them that way toward buying them instead of coming up and digging them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, we're not encouraging anyone to go dig them out of the wild. I think a couple of the callers had been asking if there were any Wisconsin, like, nurseries or places to buy them.
Yeah, so you the point is don't take them out of a property.
Right.
Perhaps if it was your own, I suppose, okay, but... it's probably best. The reason they're growing there is because the conditions are right for them to grow. And if you take them out of those conditions and put them somewhere else, then oftentimes they're just going to die. And then you've removed something from the environment that probably should have stayed right where it was. So good points, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Edwin in Rice Lake. It's your turn. Hi, Edwin.
Hi. I know you're taking questions on other houseplants as well. Is that correct?
Sure.
So I have I just bought a Tenanthe labursiana, and it's a lovely plant, but I've been noticing that the leaves are developing brown spots.
Are you getting water? Are you watering the foliage at all?
I am missing foliage, and I'm using tap water that's been sitting out 24 hours because I know the chlorine can damage the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still having that issue, and I've tried humidifying it as well, but nothing seems to solve the problem.
Gosh, I'm kind of stumped.
It's always tricky. Maybe hold off on, you know, because especially you don't want the foliage having, especially this time of year, you don't want water sitting at all really on the foliage. You can easily get like sort of spots from that. But without knowing too much about the plant, I'm not sure I can quite diagnose.
You might, it's another situation where you might want to take a photo and send that photo along with a little description to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. May not be a disease, but Brian Huddleston probably will know what it is or who to forward it to. So there's one where I think the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW could be very helpful. And pretty easy to take a photo with your smartphone and just send it off along with a little description. And he's perfectly willing to say, well, here's what it is, or I can't tell without a leaf, without a couple of the leaves in my hands to analyze. But at least he can give you some direction on where to go. So mm-hmm. I'd give that a shot. And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Kathleen in Houston, Minnesota, it's your turn.
Yeah, I have a ficus tree that's probably about 10 or 15 years old. It's a beautiful tree, but I've noticed this year it's losing all of its leaves, and the bottom part of the tree is just stems of, you know, new growth, but it didn't continue to grow.
How long have you had this ficus?
Oh, probably 10 or 15 years now.
And do you ever repot it?
I've repotted it twice.
Okay. And when was the last time?
Probably about 2 years ago. But mm-hmm. it's a huge right. pot now. It's mm-hmm. at least, 50 gallons.
Mm-hmm. And you said you haven't moved it, but this year it's just been experiencing more leaf drop?
A lot of leaf drop. Like, it's going bare, and the leaves that are still on the tree mm-hmm. are really yellow.
Mm-hmm. Have you brought in any other plants into the...
No. Nope.
Haven't brought in anything else?
Mm-mm.
I know this winter it's just been very cloudy. We've had a lot of overcast weather, and you definitely want to make sure if the leaves are yellowing and dropping, I would just make sure it's not a moisture issue.
Too much moisture?
Potentially. Yeah, it could be too much or too little. Mm-hmm. They kind of go one way, they kind of go both ways with either or.
When it's turning, when it involves yellowing leaves.
Yeah, so. And leaf drop. I don't know. Terry, do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, that's the first thing that came to mind is if it's getting enough water. You probably don't have any sort of like fan or heat blowing directly on it. That could be another thing, just foliage drying out. Other than that, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, that's as far as we can go. So take a look at your watering regimen yeah. for sure, especially if you haven't brought in any other plants. There's no.
And some of the ficus go semi-deciduous during the winter,
yeah.
especially at this, you know, at this far up in the U.S.
Mine always lost bunches of
yeah.
leaves.
And so we have a few ficus in the conservatory that even almost go bare. But then once the days are getting longer and, you know, kind of comes spring, they push out a lot of growth. So I wouldn't be too quick to cut back any of those stems because they could still be, alive.
So hang in there. Watch your watering regimen and let's just see what happens.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Kathleen, thank you. And Mary in Wausau, your turn.
Hi. So I am bringing up a comment from where you guys were talking about starting or trying to help an orchid when you put it in a bag with a little bit of the moss.
Yeah.
I've actually done that a couple times with quite some success, but I've used paper towel. You're able to kind of just control the amount of moisture, and if you feel like it's too wet or you do see a little bit of a mold developing, you can change it out really easily. I did that with a orchid that was a more of a mature orchid that was having some issues. And then even I had a Kiki, which is a baby orchid that
yeah.
forms on a stalk. And I did that with that after I removed it from the mother to kind of give it a little bit more oomph before repotting it. And that seemed to really help.
I think that's a great idea and probably a lot more affordable than having to buy some sphagnum moss. Great idea.
For sure. Definitely.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. So you just wrap it up in that, or what do you do?
I kind of just, like, fold it in half so that it can just kind of slip right inside, kind of like a little mitten almost, like a little mm-hmm. pocket. And then just either spray it with a little bit of water or if I'm going to add a new paper towel, I'll just wet it before I put it in there. I don't make sure it's sopping wet, but then I leave it cracked enough so that it can kind of breathe and then I still spray the leaves of the orchids still.
Well, that's some great advice, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. You have a great day.
You as well. Always, one of the fun things about Garden Talk is that there are a lot of good gardeners listening in and often have really good advice that goes along with our guests. And our guests today, by the way, Colton Blackburn and Terry Hodge, they both work at the Olbrich Botanical Gardens. And they're great to have them with us to take your questions and take your comments. And this year's Orchid Quest will celebrate its 31st year at the Olbrich Botanical Gardens on Saturday, February 1st and Sunday, February 2nd. You'll see an exhibit area with displays of gorgeous and unusual orchids from around the world. And you'll see a vendor area with thousands of fragrant orchids for sale from growers in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Michigan.
There's also growing seminars, a raffle, a silent auction, plenty of advice for orchid growers as well. On Saturday at 2:30, there's a presentation on orchid growing for beginners. On Sunday at 11, you can learn about the ecology of Wisconsin native orchids. And at 1 o'clock, how to grow and repot orchids. And certainly you can find out more by going to orchidgrowersguild.com. While you're at the Old Brick Gardens, be sure to see the Bolts Conservatory. It's a sunny 50-foot-high glass pyramid. It houses a diverse collection of tropical plants. It's got a rushing waterfall, free-flying birds, and, of course, blooming orchids. You can see the plants on which some very common foods grow, such as banana, coffee, and vanilla. Again, Orchid Quest is Saturday, February 1st from 9 to 4, and Sunday, February 2nd from 9 to 3 at Old Brick Gardens in Madison. Orchid Quest is hosted by the Madison Orchid Growers Guild. Thank you for listening to the Ideas Network and to Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. For joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Orchids and tropical plants, houseplants are our topics today with our two guests from the Old Brick Botanical Gardens. Colton Blackburn is the conservatory curator and Terry Hodge, the conservatory and orchid horticulturist. So great to have them along. And let's take a call. Peter in River Falls has been waiting a bit. Peter, thanks for waiting.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. About 15 years ago or so, I was walking out in the back 40 and noticed these pink flowers, and I looked them up, and they're called large purple fringed orchids. And there must be a native orchid, and I've never seen them since, and I'm wondering if your guests know anything about what I can do to recreate the conditions for them to flower again.
Did you dig them up, Al?
No, Peter? I left them. There were so many of them. I just observed them and said, wow, those are really cool. And, you know, they came up in the fence line. They came up in a fallow field. They kind of came up all over the place. And, you know, I took some pictures, but that was a long time before cell phones and stuff, I think. But I just noted that they were there and found some pictures online, so I know what, you know, what they were called, but haven't seen them really since.
So they haven't come back, in other words.
Correct. I haven't seen them. And it was kind of, I think it was like early to middle June when they showed up. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. I can't wait to see those again. And it's been a long wait.
It's been a long 15 years, as a matter of fact. Well, there's any number of reasons like something like that could happen. Mm-hmm. Colton, you know, it could be, or Terry for that matter. I mean, there could have been some sort of, there could have been maybe, probably doesn't sound like it, but there could have been some herbicide drift. There could have been some changes in the amount of foliage and trees grow over 15 years. Those are the two that come to my mind right away. Anything else in your mind that might have created the problem?
You know, not really. Just some sort of disturbance that could have, you know, shifted its life cycle. I don't know if, I actually don't know much about that orchid in particular, but if it has to sort of build up energy in order to put up a flower spike, that could take a number of years to get the right amount of energy reserves. That's all I got.
There could also be some more competition from other plants.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. And that would be the, and that might even be the most likely reason, as I'm thinking about this, that some other plants are kind of crowding it out, crowding them out, or creating conditions where, as what you said, Terry, they takes them a long time to put some reserves enough up to throw up flowers. So that's the best we got, Peter. I'm not sure what else we can speculated here about as much as we can possibly speculate, I think, on that situation. Thank you for calling, though. And, you know, just this whole business about native orchids, Roseanne emailed to say that the native orchids include pink lady slippers, rattlesnake plantain, yellow lady slippers, grass pinks, coral roots, Adam and Eve, ladies' tresses. She's never heard of them grown indoors. And Jack in the Pulpit, of course, is, as you were saying, Colton, is not an orchid. And frankly, they don't do well, or they maybe not do any good at all if you try to bring them indoors. But you can plant them, perhaps, outdoors.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, they're probably really tricky. I know the natives, it's... they probably don't like very disturbed sites. Takes a while for them to be established. But if you're looking to try one of those slipper orchids inside, I would say try one of the Paphiopedilums. That'll give you like that sort of that slipper orchid that you see in some of the natives, but is better suited as it is a tropical to grow in your house.
Yeah, good idea. Norma in Fox Point emailed to say she has a dendrobium that has never bloomed for 7 years. She fertilizes it once a week. Should she fertilize more often? Also, are white flies on coleus deadly to a plant unless treated? She's fertilizing once a week. That could be too much fertilizer.
Yeah, I was going to say, depending on the strength of it, it could be too much. Could be too much nitrogen, so it's just going to be putting on foliage. The other thing that comes to mind, and we mentioned briefly, is a lot of these orchids, they need kind of a diurnal temperature change of 10, 15, even 20 degrees sometimes. And that just allows them to build up reserves, energy reserves during the day. And because their respiration, the way they digest all the sugars they're producing is dictated by temperature, typically at night, they could burn all that out. And so what you need to do is sort of slow that down. And that's what that diurnal temperature change does. It allows them to slow down at night and sort of bank some of the energy that they're creating during the day. And the other thing is, it could just be a light issue. It could be not getting enough light. Oftentimes with orchids that don't flower, they kind of just need to get more light.
Yeah, and fertilizing once a week, and you were talking about watering, too, and fertilizing, and just fertilizing a little bit more, watering a little bit more often with a much lighter fertilizer?
Yes, that's definitely one technique to do. Yep.
Yeah, there we go. Let's take another call here. Cliff in La Pointe, it's your turn. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, how are you doing today? I'm fine.
Well, great. And what's on your mind today?
I have an indoor dwarf banana plant that's it's doing well right now, but it's starting to get big. It started out just like 8 inches, maybe it came to me, and I'm at a good 2 feet now, mm-hmm. A good 2 feet, maybe a little more, and there's three healthy stalks on it.
Okay.
And I've transplanted it 3 times, and it's currently in a 12-inch planter by probably a foot deep. And I just wonder how to take care of it going forward. I water it heavily when I water it. Mm-hmm. I never let the soil completely thaw out, and I fertilize it like every 3 months with your just off-the-shelf garden variety, no pun intended, of edible plant food fertilizer.
Okay. Yeah, so with your dwarf bananas, some of those can even get up to like 10 feet or so. Just because it says dwarf doesn't necessarily mean it'll stay very small. But with bananas, they're going to be heavy feeders, especially during their growing season. So you're going to probably want to fertilize even more frequently than just every 3 months. As far as caring for it, these are actually plants that you could technically just dig up come the fall if you keep them out in like out on your patio per se. You could dig these up and actually just cut them down to about a foot, and you could store them in a basement or like a cool, dark area for actually the whole winter. So because the stems on the banana are just the trunk is actually just modified leaves, the growing point is actually that is underground. So, yeah, you can cut those back and they'll
come back.
Right back. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, there you go, Cliff. Thanks so much for calling. Let's turn to Al in Madison next. Hi, Al.
Hi. Hi, Larry. I enjoy your show, and I wanted to remind listeners that they can listen to your archived podcasts. I enjoy those. And then my question is I have a spider plant, and it's root-bound. I read that it likes to be root-bound, so I'm wondering if I should wait to repot it to spring, because now when I give it water, it like greens up real good, but then it fades again kind of quick. So I wonder if it's just like too root bound, or what, or if I should fertilize it, or
Okay, so you're saying that between waterings it's drying out too much, you think?
Well, I don't know if it's drying out too much. Well, probably. Because it the green color, it's a variegated one,
mm-hmm.
and the green in it kind of fades quite a bit. And then that's how I know when to water it next.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to end up killing it.
And if you're worried about like taking it too large of a pot, when you're repotting, you can always just kind of use the same size pot and just kind of remove that bottom I'd say no more than a third of that, like root, the root mass from in the pot. Like just saw off that bottom third and just put new media in the bottom, and that might help keep a little moisture in there if the plant is getting very root bound.
All right, does that help, Al?
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And just back to native plants for a minute, and we were talking about. Not getting, don't dig up native plants out in the wild. But Nancy in Ridgeland emailed to remind us about native plants. Sometimes where there are bulldozer alerts when something is going to be built and the ground destroyed, wildflower enthusiasts encourage people to come and rescue those plants and move them to other locations. She's built a fairly nice wild plant garden that way. So that's something to keep in mind as well. We have Rich in Madison up next. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Hi, Larry.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I just had some potential information for the question on the issue of the purple fringed orchid and why it's a lot we're seeing 1 year and then not again.
Yeah.
I was hoping maybe someone more knowledgeable like Scott Weber would call in, but I thought I'd just pipe up that that species is pretty well known for great fluctuations in population numbers, and it seems to come and go on sites very frequently, so that's a pretty common event for that species. Part of the issue is they don't bloom every year, so you don't notice them when they're not blooming, but even so, their numbers can crash. The plants actually, they don't live that long quite often, and so the population just fluctuates a lot naturally.
All right. Well, that is good to know. Rich, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. All right. We've got Susie in Whitewater up next. Hi, Susie.
Hi. I have a question for you regarding moving a plant. I have about a 15-foot-long orchid cactus.
Wow.
It's beautiful, and it gets the plumes that are about 8 inches long that hang down, and they're very feathery-like, beautiful magenta, red, pink, white. My question is, I'm going to have to move in 3 months, and I will be moving from Whitewater to about 2 hours north of here. It sits in a pot that's probably about 16 inches diameter. How am I going to move this thing safely?
Well, I had that same situation. I had one that was actually even higher than 12 feet, as a matter of fact, in the last home that I had before this home. And it's very... yeah. I couldn't do it. I left it with the people who owned the house. But I had it break off a couple of times. And what I did was I took the broken piece and just let it sit for a couple of weeks on its own. And then I repotted and got some new ones. So you might be in a situation where you're going to have to whack it down.
Yeah, you might have to, just take a prop off of it and let that kind of callus off and then plant it. Because I imagine it's going to be difficult, because you said 2 months, so it'll still be cold here.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot.
A lot of obstacles.
a lot of obstacles in your pathway. But if you want to preserve the whole length, the whole 12 feet, I don't know what you'd do. I honestly, especially only 2 months from now, I could see some potential possibilities if it was going to be, in a warm situation. But you might be in one of those situations where you're just going to have to take a cutting or just whack it down and take the bottom. Yeah. If you want to keep the bottom, just keep the bottom and dry the other one out and grow yourself another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Susie, does that help?
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. I don't know what did
one. Yeah, if your car's not 15 feet long inside,
that's a tough
I don't
one.
Know.
Yeah, well, you got a truck, you can put it in a truck, but I mean, laying them down, they're so easy to snap. Mm-hmm. They're so easy to snap. I can tell you that for sure. Having had that experience more than once with that, but it was a lovely, lovely plant. That's mine was anyway, and I'll bet Susie's was as well. And if you want to know some more about the Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison, you can just type that into a search engine. And Olbrich, by the way, is spelled Olbrich, so it's like old. Rich.
Yeah.
Rich. But it's pronounced Rick. Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Well, I want to thank you guys so much for being with us, Colton and Terry. It's been a lot of fun. I hope we have a chance to do this again.
As always, thank you.
Thank you.
Colton Blackburn and Terry Hodge are with the Olbrich Botanical Gardens. It was fun talking with them today about orchids and a lot of other things as well, and we'll get them back and do it again. And speaking of enjoying gardens, even during the colder months, Wisconsin's botanical gardens around the state are about to light up for the season, and here are a few worth checking out.
Holiday light displays in Wisconsin just keep getting bigger and better. And some of the best are located in our botanical gardens. And since we are all about gardens, we thought we'd highlight a few on this edition of Time Out Wisconsin. Talking to me from the Green Bay Botanical Garden is Dave Barco. He is the facilities and maintenance coordinator, and he's in charge of setting up the WPS Garden of Lights every year. The display at the garden has been around since 1997, and this year, the magic starts on November 29th. Thanks so much for joining us, Dave. I know that you are super busy putting on the final touches of this year's display. When did you actually start putting it up?
We start in the first week in October. Takes us about 7 weeks to set up, so we are into our seventh week right now.
Oh, my gosh. So have you ever sat down and figured out how many hours it takes to put all those lights up?
For me, it takes some time. I usually do about 500 hours a year with the light show.
Wow. That's a lot. Do you have help, though?
Yes, we have. I have a couple coworkers that help me out, and then we have a great group of volunteers. There's about 10 to 15 that come throughout the week, and they help me whenever I need help, and they're wonderful guys and gals, and I depend a lot on them.
So talk a little bit about what people can expect to see when they go to the gardens.
Well, we're a botanical garden, so everything is botanical themed.
Okay.
A garden theme, so we try to bring what you would see in the summertime and bring that into lights.
Now, who designs your shows?
I do. Ooh. So example, a few years back, we had koi fish that was donated to us.
Uh-huh.
And people absolutely loved the koi fish. They were huge, and the kids loved them and everything. And so I wanted to bring that into light. So we have a display called Under the Pond, and it's got these large, very large koi fish along with some seaweed, and there's a turtle in there, and there's things that water flowing through it and stuff like that, and people absolutely love it.
Oh, I can see why. So tell me, first thing that came to my mind is how much does your electric bill go up every year?
You know, we're pretty much all LEDs now. We're 99% LEDs. So
okay, that makes a
big
difference.
Our electric bill is not that bad compared to what it used to be 10 years ago when we were doing all incandescents. So it's relatively inexpensive.
So what are some of the problems that you have, you know, run into over the years when you're putting up the display? Weather, I'm assuming?
Yes. Well, Mother Nature hasn't been very kind to us this year.
So no.
We had, in Green Bay here, we've had over 12 inches of snow in October and November, and it's been very cold.
Yes.
We've had single digits in the morning, so our volunteers truck through it, and we get it done. So Mother Nature this year has been a little challenging.
And what's your favorite part of the display this year?
This year we got a new one called Butterflies in Motion. And that is also a spinoff from what we had over the summer. We had a Butterflies in Bloom display where people could come walk through a butterfly house. And so I wanted, well, let's create lights with that. So that's what we did. We created a little miniature greenhouse people can walk through, and we have got chrysalis, and we got these butterflies that are actually in motion now. We've gotten motors with them, and we got mechanical wings, so the butterflies are actually moving, and you're able to walk through this butterfly house.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And just quickly, there are a few other things to do besides just look at the lights, aren't there?
Sure. One of the things we have a horse-drawn wagon rides. Those are available every single night. And inside there's Santa Claus, there's food, there's a railroad display, a really nice railroad display.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you again, Dave. Get back out at it because we want it to be perfect.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Again, the fun starts the day after Thanksgiving. You can find out more about the Green Bay Botanical Garden and the WPS Garden of Lights by going to gbbg.org. Other botanical garden holiday light displays can be found at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. And in Milwaukee, you can drive through the light display at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Whitnall Park. This is just a very few of the many events taking place around the state in the next few weeks. If you have an event you'd like to tell us about, email us at timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org. And find links to the events we talked about today at wpr.org/timeout. I'm Jill Nadeau. Until next month, get out and explore, dream, and discover.